Welcome to the Investor Mama Podcast, Money Conversations with a Mom's Touch. Your host, Jen Narciso, interviews amazing guests each week to help you become educated, be inspired by other money stories, and stay motivated on your own wealth-building journey. No matter where you are financially, whether you're in debt or financially free, this podcast is for you. Now sit back and enjoy.
Welcome back to the Investor Mama Podcast, Money Conversations with a Mom's Touch. I'm your host, Jen Narciso. Happy Thursday, everyone. I hope you're enjoying it. This week, I have the pleasure of interviewing Dr. Jennifer Price, PhD and LMSW. She has experience working with teens, young adults, and their families for over the past 20 years. She's an author and online course creator on topics all related around college admissions and career selection. She has just so much knowledge and is an awesome mom. When you hear some of the things she's doing with her son, it's just great. We did record this a little while back now, but the content is amazing and the tips and tricks that she talks about are awesome. So if you or anyone you know is starting to think about college, or even if not, maybe you have kids that are in middle school, you definitely won't want to miss this episode as Dr. Price goes through ways that you can actually select the right college and some of the things to think about and consider. And so I'm going to jump in. It is a long episode, but I hope you enjoy it. And so without further ado, Dr. Price, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you, Jen. Nice to talk with you tonight.
You too. Thank you so much for coming on. I'm really excited to dive in because I'm sure a lot of moms out there want to learn about, so college, how do I pay for it? And what's this all about? But before we dive into the meat of today's episode, why don't you tell me a little bit about your background and your own personal money story?
Sure. I'm born and raised in Texas. I grew up in a working class family. I grew up in a single parent home. My father actually raised myself and my three younger sisters. He was a widower, and he told us that we were going to college. We knew from childhood that college was what came next after high school. However, we never talked about how that would get paid for, where the money would come from. And so I got it in my head that I wanted to go to college on a full ride academic scholarship. And I made the mistake of telling the wrong person. There was an insurance salesman at our home one evening, and I made my declaration, I'm going to college and I'm going on a full ride scholarship. And he's like, oh, well, that's not possible. And that was the wrong thing to tell a determined seventh grader. That was the wrong thing to tell me.
I love it, though. That's so inspiring.
And so what ended up happening was I was a really big reader. I love to read. And so my dad would take us to the public library. And then, I figured whatever I needed to learn is in a library book or in a book somewhere. And so I started looking up scholarship information in seventh grade. I know that's really strange and that's not normal, but in seventh grade,
amazing, I started looking for money. Kudos to your parents. Did your parents have any influence over you? Because that's most seventh graders do not do that.
Well, my dad was very supportive. He just went along with what I was doing. And I would ask him for stamps. I was like, Dad, I need another stamp. And I would write these foundations and ask for their applications. And I would look at their applications and study them and look at what they wanted in their applicant. And I learned about how important grades were, how important test scores were, how you're expected to be involved in clubs and activities and community service and to lead. And so I modeled my high school experience after what I learned from those scholarship applications. And in high school, when it was time, I had some information on scholarships already, and I started applying. Like, it was one of my part-time jobs, applying for college. And I applied and applied, and I would stay up late doing my work for my AP courses, and I would stay up late with my little electric typewriter that I bought with my own money because I had a part-time job at Walgreens in the pharmacy. And I applied, and it paid off. My bachelor's and my master's degrees were both paid for in full at the University of Texas at Austin.
Wow.
Some horns. And I went on a full-ride academic scholarship. And that insurance man, I don't know where he is today. He was wrong.
I feel like you almost have to thank him for putting that light under your belt just to get you going. Mm-hmm. What did you major in college and in master's? And you have your doctorate?
Yes, I do. I have a bachelor's degree in sociology. And my master's degree is in social work, and I'm licensed in our state in counseling and social work. And I have my PhD in instructional design and technology with the focus in online learning, which is so relevant for today in terms of what's going on in education. And so kind of stayed in the same space, sociology, social work, and education.
That's great. So how did you get into helping other students with their own college journey?
Great question. One of the days that I was in my apartment all alone, doing some soul searching, I was like, what am I going to do with myself? I'm like a junior heading into my senior year in college. And I mean, I had gone and done some career testing, which helped me get into the right major, because I started off as a pharmacy major, which organic chemistry happened. And I realized, you know, that was not for me. Wow. And so I got into the, you know, the more of the sociology, social work. And I was like, well, how do I want to help people specifically? I just sat down in my apartment because I didn't have a TV. I was a poor college student. This is soul searching. I just wrote out, what do I really enjoy? What am I good at? What do I know? And what I wrote down on that piece of paper was the foundation for what I'm doing 20 years later.
That's incredible. So for a mom out there who has kids that are college age students, walk me through some of the first steps, some of the first principles or concepts to help guide their child in picking the right college for them.
Well, I mean, I'm a mom and I have a 6-year-old. And so unfortunately for him, fortunately.
I was going to say, so what college is he going to?
I already have his life planned out. But not everything, just like most of it. No, but I'm observing. But I'm like watching him all the time. Like, okay, oh, he likes Legos. Maybe he wants to be this type of engineer. Oh, he likes art. Oh, maybe he look at art and design schools. Oh, he likes people. He's very talkative. Oh, maybe he needs to be. And so, but just looking, I mean, parents, I mean, pay attention to what your son and daughter, what lights them up? What are they excited about? I mean, a lot of times students just really haven't been introduced to very many career fields. They know about doctor, lawyer, teacher, but there are so many career fields out there. And so just having them talk, observing them to get an idea of what their interests are and encouraging those interests, you know, whether it's through a club or activity or lessons of some sort, just to help them determine what direction they want to head in. And then maybe let them talk to some of your friends or family members that are in those fields already, or maybe take them to work with you. And so, I mean, when they're in college, though, they can use that time to take some electives. I do encourage career testing. I'm a very big supporter of career testing. That's part of how I got on track for the degrees that I ended up earning, just because I was like, pharmacy is not working. I want to help people, but I don't have to help people this way. There are many other ways. And after organic chemistry happened, I was like, let me get some career testing. So I'm a big supporter of career testing. I mean, not necessarily because every time will it tell you precisely what to do. It may give you a list of 15 or 10 career options that are a great fit. And so then the student will still have to do some career exploration, whether it's through electives, whether it's through job shadow, internships, part-time employment, some actual research. Mm-hmm. I think those are all ways to help a student to finalize what their major is. And if they can do some of that on the front end before they head off to college, that's a great way to save money. And you're not paying for that fifth year of tuition and living expenses. And so just helping them to think about that now, not to put pressure on them, you know, because they get that question a lot over the holidays, you know, when you're with family. So what are you going to be when you grow up? What are you going to be when you grow up? And they're like, I don't know. They might just say something just to get you off their back, but just to encourage them to explore.
It's funny, not funny, but like now that we're in this pandemic and a lot of people are teaching their kids, became stay-at-home mom or teacher homeschooling and things like that. I've been reading a lot of different people who have gone the homeschooling route. And I think now is the perfect time to not watch your kid, but see what they gravitate towards. And I'm wondering if you have any tips for now that we have the time and people are stuck, for better or worse, with their children, what can they do to help see what interests them or help guide them or teach them or push them a little bit to see where they navigate for? Because I think all that, what you were just saying, this is like the perfect period for the freedom to explore all that. So what can moms be doing now or parents be doing now as we're in this time, this pandemic?
I feel like we're given a gift of time and we're all forced to slow down. And as we're together, just observing, you know, I mean, first of all, I mean, if you consider like what your child is talking about when they come home, when they were coming home from school, what subjects were they talking about? What did they get excited about? What projects were really exciting? And as we've had to step in and be the teacher, we have a better idea of where our students' strengths are, where they are. Maybe they really like to write and they like to pretend and write books, or maybe they like to paint, or maybe they really need that physical activity and they really want to dance, or maybe at tumble, or maybe they really like to assemble and build things with Legos or any number of things, just observing what they're doing and introducing them to different things. This is a great opportunity to say, okay, well, let's go on a nature walk and see how they interact with nature, or maybe if they're learning how to care for a pet, or maybe they're the ones who want to write the letter to the grandparents or to the neighbors, or bake something to take to a neighbor. And so just observing where their strengths are and where their passions are, what are they interested in? What do they ask you to do? Or certainly there are a lot of commercials on TV now and they get ideas about things as well. Like, oh, I really want this too. You're like, okay. But, I mean, that's important. That can be important information too, because they learn through playing when they're younger.
And how could someone help guide them in play? Like, is there any tips or recommendations you could encourage? I know that's not quite your area of expertise, but I'm just curious in your own personal experience being a mom, like how you've helped your son even facilitate some of that.
Well, I will say, because I am an educator and a counselor, especially because I do career counseling.
So you are perfect for this question.
For teens and young adults. I actually have to make myself back up and say, you know what? I need to let him be a kid. And I say that because so many times, by the time they're in high school and they come visit with me, they've had so much pressure. Their lives have been like scheduled, like every minute is scheduled of the day into the evening into right before bedtime. And so I try to purposely follow his lead, because I am in education. He is still learning over the summer.
Yeah.
He doesn't get the summer off, but I still tried to give him time to, okay, well, what do you want to do on your tablet? Certainly I'm going to ask you to do ABC Mouse, but what do you like to do on the tablet? And you could have half the time you can spend on something academic and I'll let you choose. And then the other half, you can choose what you do for fun. Or do you want to do Legos right now? Do you want to paint? I give him options at times. Other times he'll request, oh, mom, can you go to the store and buy me some clay?
Oh, okay.
Or, which I can't really get to the store, but hey, online, Amazon.
Yep, I hear that.
Order, you know, or Target, you know, they have in-store pickup when I can get in without him. And so I just try to not do what I would normally do in terms of trying to schedule everything and trying to map out a plan and give him some more flexibilities and observe and encourage him. So like when he shows me his Lego pirate ship and just be excited with him. And when he wants me to play Legos with him, I'll play it. Yeah. I'm not really good at playing Legos with him because I'm not that great with Legos, but I'll stop and I'll try to do it with him. And he starts talking to me about, you know, kind of what he's thinking about and what inspires him in his design. And he's only six.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible for a six-year-old, I must say. And I absolutely love the word that you keep using, observe, because I find oftentimes as a parent, you're on your phone or you're thinking about a million other things, and we have this gift of time right now, but to just stop and pause, I think is so important and something we often forget to do. And I know for many people out there, it's not always so easy because they may not have the luxury to stop and pause. They may have to be working full time and they are trying to balance the kids and do everything. But I think if there is any way, even on the weekend, just to spend like 10, 15 minutes with your kid and like you said, observe, I think that's I love that word. I don't know why, it just like really stood out.
And listening to them too. I mean, my son is very talkative in general. I don't know where he would get that from. I have no idea how he came out that way, but he has a lot to say. He's thinking about a lot of things.
It's so wonderful, though. It's like the best quality I think a kid can have, is just to be so personable. No, but that's such a good thing. I agree with you, though, listening as well. And I think that I feel like so often, also what you were saying about trying to push your kids and trying to do this and trying to do that, how do you prevent yourself from doing that too? Because I feel like there's the extreme where parents aren't enough focused on their kids and then they're too focused on their kids. So how do you balance and navigate that?
You know, it's tough. I mean, and I think part of the reason why I'm so mindful of that constantly is because of what I've seen at the other end. Now, I've seen the students that start soccer when they're like 5 or mm-hmm. 6. And by the time they're in high school, they've lost their passion for it. And then I see the kids come in, they're just so anxious about the college admissions process. And they're afraid to make any mistake. And they try to do everything perfect. And just seeing those students remind me that I really have to do better. And it's not like, I mean, we love our kids and we want the best for them, but I know that it's not uncommon for people to plan out the right preschool, the right kindergarten. Yeah. And some people will sell their home or come talk to me and say, do we need to move into this district or should they go to this private school? This is what we want them to go to, an Ivy League school. And their whole life is almost planned out. And so I try my best to encourage families. Sure, you want your child to have the best. Sure, you want them to excel, but not at the expense of their mental health. And maybe yeah. I'm coming at it from that perspective as well because of my degree in social work and my license in counseling. But even with COVID-19, I mean, mental health, people are realizing how important that is. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's important for the kids too. And trying to keep up with the competitive landscape of college admission. I mean, we've heard about what happened with the scandal and the links that parents will go to get their child admitted to a particular institution. And it's really gotten out of hand. And at the end of the day, I try to encourage families to think about, it's not about, and this might be controversial, it's not about, can they get into the most selective institution possible? It shouldn't be about that. It's about what is the best fit for your child, the best fit major, the best fit college, the best fit career, because the goal is we're thinking about the end game. We want them to go to school and thrive. And yeah. we want them to be successful in life. And just because they have a degree from a certain institution, that doesn't mean they're guaranteed success for the rest of their life. I mean, after a certain point, your working experience will count. I mean, sure, the degree might get you in the door, but at some point, your experience will be the more important. Can you interact with other people? Are you a team player? Are you a leader? Can you communicate? Those other kind of life skills are important too. And you might say, oh, it's easy for you to say you went to what's considered a public Ivy League school in Texas. But at the end of the day, you want them to thrive. You want them to be happy. You want them to have fulfilled lives. And I've had students who have gone to school to earn a degree that their parents wanted them to earn. And they come back and they see me after they get the degree and they're like, well, now what do I do? Because I really don't want to do this. Or they go to a school where their parents are grandparents and they have a miserable time. It's not a good fit. And so what a disservice we do our children by trying to make, I guess, what is it, a square peg fit in a round hole.
Yeah.
At some point we have to come to terms with, okay, you know what? Maybe your son or daughter is not an engineer. Maybe they are artistic. And that is not like a bad word. And it's not, they yeah. can still find a way to make a living. They just may have to be more creative and more strategic about how they map out a plan for success for their future. Because the kid doesn't usually want to live at home for the rest of their life either.
Yeah. No, that's so true. And I don't think what you just said is controversial. If anything, I think I'll be controversial then too, is sometimes college isn't even right for kids. Sometimes they make more money going into trade school, especially now with the cost of college. They're so astronomical. I mean, my husband and I have even been thinking, like, we're saving for our kids' college, but they don't go. Like, it's not the end of the world because we know they could be just as successful being business owners or doing a ton of other things and save money as well.
Absolutely.
Well, let me ask you this. When do you usually meet with students? At what age?
Well, I've seen students as early as junior high. Just because there are some courses that you can take in junior high that will impact wow. your schedule in high school. And if you're heading towards a certain goal, like maybe engineering or some STEM careers, your goal is to try to take calculus by your senior year. And if you don't take Algebra 1 by eighth grade, you're kind of off track with that. And it's kind of hard to catch up on math later and double up on math. You don't typically do that in high school. There is a way, but it's a little not ideal. And so, but generally I would say families start talking with me in a more regular basis when their student is in 10th grade. Now, the 9th grade year, they're figuring out high school.
Yeah.
There are some things that they need to do in 9th grade, like make sure they get good grades in high school starting out, because sometimes 9th graders don't. And then they're like, for the rest of their years in high school, they're struggling to try to bring up the GPA because they had a bad year or a bad semester in 9th grade. And so right out the gate, you need to know best effort, get a tutor if your grade dips below a C, or if it's at a C, get a tutor. And so I do have a way that I work with families one-on-one, but because I just found that I just really wanted to help more families, what I decided to do is use my instructional design and technology degree, my PhD, and my focus in online learning to replicate myself and the process that I've used for over 20 years with students and families. And I created an online college advising course called College Edge. And students and families together can work through the process of preparing their student to apply for college. And they can watch videos. There's 10 different modules that they can watch. And then there's additional resources. And there's homework that the student and family can do together so that when they are ready to apply for college, they'll have their expanded resume to use to fill out their application for admission. They'll know how to ask for recommendation letters. They'll know who to ask. They'll have a sample recommendation letter for someone who maybe has not written one before that they could share with them. So things like that are a part of the online course. And especially with COVID-19 and students not being able to access their guidance counselors or have limited access in the summer in general, or maybe they can't afford a one-on-one college counselor, this is a way just to help as many students possible that want to realize that dream of going on to a four-year degree and have the strategies that they need to be successful.
It's amazing. And I will definitely put a link in the show notes because I know it's incredible. And thank you for putting that together, because I know a lot of families, I'm sure, are benefiting and will benefit. I know when, by the time our kids are of that age, that is definitely going to be something I could see as useful. And that ties right into my next question, actually, is now I know you've helped help kids get $15 million in scholarships, which is incredible. Now, talk me through that a little bit. I don't even know what the question is that I actually want to ask, because I know like every child's different and there's so many different strategies, and not everyone wants to go to Ivy Leagues, or not everyone wants to, like you said, go for the best fit school. So how did you help them with all this money, and how do you help them navigate through this process?
Yes. I mean, there are many ways to maximize the scholarship awards. And so one way that I would share with families is it's through where your child is choosing to apply for college. And so through college, the college selection process is probably probably the number one way to win the most scholarship money. And I say that because if families are aware of how institutions are awarding money, they can decide if that school should be on their child's list based on their situation. And college fit, I mean, sure, they want to have the major that the student is wanting to study, and you have to look at the geography and the culture. And so there are a lot of things that go into selecting a school that's a good fit, but part of it is also financial fit. And so what I mean by that is maybe a family is in a situation with the economy, the way that it is, they suddenly now would be eligible for need-based aid. And so knowing if a school, if it's a part of their policy to award money based on need, then it would be to their advantage to apply to schools that award only need-based aid. And they can determine that by filling out the FAFSA, pre-application for federal student aid, or the CSS profile. They can fill out either of those documents and do like an estimator, calculator to determine what their potential need might be, and then look at schools that give need-based aid. I'll give an example. For some of the students I worked with in the past, maybe their family, they were fortunate enough that their family was able to save money for their child's education. And so maybe there wasn't a high need, but that doesn't mean they didn't have a need. They have more than one child. And like maybe their younger sibling is heading to college right after that one in another year or two. And so maybe the federal government doesn't think that there is a need, but the family knows that. So you can't just write a check like you're thinking we can. And so I had one student, for example, who had to decide between, she had narrowed it down to Duke and OU. And I know those are very different institutions. Yeah. Yeah. And so she was an engineering major. And in her case, she had to decide, do I want to go to a school that my parents were going to have to pay full price for me to attend, which in her case was Duke? Or can I go to a school that's a public flagship school? And she was in marching band. And so she had a chance to continue in marching band by choosing OU. And also, which is University of Oklahoma. So I'm in the Southwest area. And additionally, she had a chance to take courses in engineering honors so she could have the academic rigor. And she wanted more of a balanced experience in college as opposed to, she was like number six in her very large competitive high school that's consistently ranked nationwide. And so she was like, I've worked really intensely just for pretty much my entire academic career. I want to be in a situation where I could have a more balanced, I want to have a life. I want to be challenged academically, but I also want to be able to continue to play my instrument and have a little bit more of a social life than I had before in the past. And her mom was only looking at paying for housing. So pay full price to have the name at Duke or go on to a school that you're only paying housing for 4 years. And fast forward, it's been probably about 10, 12 years. I mean, she's been very successful. And that's the beauty of LinkedIn. My students, they're able to find me and tell me how they're doing. And fast forward, she had great success in college. Every time I turn on the TV and I could see her in the marching band. And so she was enjoying that and also still being challenged academically. And the last I heard, she was in a PhD program.
Wow. Good for her. That's great.
She's enjoyed her career. She's enjoyed her career in engineering. And so sometimes I think families get caught up in the name of the school. And it's like, well, you don't necessarily have to have the name. You definitely want the student to go to a school where they have a strong program in their area of study. Uh-huh. That's important, but it's not always about the name brand. And so looking at schools that are state schools out of state, they may actually be more affordable or the same cost as going to school in state in some cases because of merit-based scholarships. And families don't necessarily, they may automatically rule out a public out-of-state school thinking, oh, it's too expensive, you pay out-of-state tuition. But they want geographic diversity at those institutions. They want to be able to say, oh, we have students from 50 states here represented. And they want students to meet students from other parts of the country. And they want that diversity. And so thinking outside the box, you know, looking at private schools, and you think, oh, well, private schools are always very expensive. They do cost a bit more, but you're getting those smaller class sizes. And you're also having the professor actually knowing your name and maybe opportunities for undergraduate research. But they also have merit-based money as well. And I've seen students go to private schools on occasion for the same price as going to their public, their state public institution. And so it's possible.
So I'm just curious with your experience navigating colleges, you've visited over 200. I'm curious, what are some of the trends you've seen now? I know this is 2020 and things are constantly changing. From when I was back quite a number of years ago, I went to Rutgers, and I know at that time it was it's a much better, more prestigious state school even now. But back then the cost was creeping up there. And now I know it's like significantly more expensive than what it was back then. Are you seeing that across the board with colleges? Are you seeing colleges giving out more scholarships to meet the increased costs? Are you seeing more students actually go to community colleges instead of state colleges? Or are you still seeing the competitiveness where students want to go to the Ivies?
So there, I feel like there's two pieces to your question. One is pre-COVID-19.
That's a very good point. A very good point. Yes.
It's kind of like two sets of answers.
Yes. It's a very good point.
Before COVID-19, I would say in general, I mean, colleges, definitely the price is creeping up. Application process a whole lot more complicated. Back when I went to school in the dark ages, the application was one page front and back. And now the student can spend, you know, hours trying to fill out the application and writing more than one essay and even some supplemental and some short answer responses and a lot more involved. And of course, they may also have to do recommendation letters or recommendation forms. So the application process is more competitive. Also, more students are doing test prep now. It's very common for students to take an SAT prep course or an ACT prep course. And so scores are trending higher. And so just going into the test cold, like we make, like, you know, I did a little bit of prep. I did like a very short prep class a long time ago when I was in high school, but it's very common for students to prep maybe several weeks to, and they might even start prepping before they take the PSAT. And so it's the academic, the climate is a lot more competitive, you know, from test score perspective. In terms of the resumes, I mean, students are really thoughtful about how to be involved, and some will plan out what they plan to, what activities they plan to be involved in, and when they hope to go after a leadership position versus just being reactive. They're proactive because they know that that's going to count, that, that that will make a difference when they're applying for college. And so overall, I would say higher cost, more competitive, higher test scores. But now that we're in a situation where the whole world is in crisis, in particular the U.S., I would say the colleges are now, some are actually offering some significant ways to discount. They're discounting and are saving families money. For example, I've heard of a private school that's now saying, well, we'll charge the state school price if you want to come to our institution. Of course, there's the regular merit-based scholarships, which is tuition discounting, where essentially they could charge less, but they charge more and then they give you the scholarship.
Yeah.
So that's something that happens as well. But also financial aid packages, this is a great time to renegotiate financial aid packages, because the campuses, they still want students to come to campus. And so they're willing to work with you more than they may have been in the past to put together a financial aid package. And of course, family situations have changed drastically in some cases. And there definitely is a need now when before there may not have been.
Yeah, I know my cousin is supposed to go to the University of South Carolina, and now she's deferring because she's actually going to get a better package now for next year. She's going to go to a community college now online because she's not going to go to South Carolina at this point anyway. Mm-hmm. And she's saving a ton of money. And first one, because she's going to be able to save this year, and then now she's got a better package even for next year. Is that also happening too a lot? Like, are more students want to stay at home or versus going in?
I think parents are hesitant to send their child away.
Yeah,
it's scary, the thought of sending your child away during these times. And so the idea of community college is a lot more appealing to students and families, not only from a safety and health perspective, but also from a price perspective because of what's happened with the economy. The student can live at home, pay less in tuition, and still transfer in in some cases, some students are choosing to do like a gap year where they take a year off, and some might try to get an internship, which is tricky right now with social distancing. It's a bit trickier now, but definitely I foresee an increase in enrollment at the community college for sure, from a money perspective and a health and safety perspective. Certainly colleges still want the students to come, but when families are facing, you may have to do online courses. And there's been media about how students are not really a big fan of some of the online offerings right now. And I think it's because it's not necessarily being done well. And that's part of why I went to school and got my PhD and focused on online learning, because I knew that was the wave that was coming. And so I was fully aware that a lot of colleges, they're doing it, but it may not be offering enough interaction with the student. It's maybe they're just watching a video, or they're just reading text and submitting an assignment, and the student really needs more interaction, especially when you're talking about undergraduates. I mean, when you're dealing with graduate students who are more motivated, they're going to get the work done regardless of if they feel entertained or educated.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that word.
It's so true. Yeah.
It's different. So like high school and then middle school, I mean, it's very different at the different levels too in terms of what the needs are. And so a lot of changes. I mean, and colleges are getting more flexible in terms of whether or not they will take test scores or if they're required or not. Some schools are saying, we're going to be test optional for a season, or we're going to stay test optional, or we're going to do away with certain test requirements. And that gives students an opportunity if they maybe are not the best test takers, right? So that gives them more of a level playing field.
So I wanted to go through an example of if a student were to come to you, how you would walk them through the thought process of selecting a college. I would love, if you are open to it, to do that, but in this new world lens, because I know it's so hard because we don't quite know what's going to happen. And this could just be a short term, or this could be the next 5 years. Let's just assume right now, if that's okay, someone comes to you, they're looking at a college, let's say they're a junior. How do you walk them through this, especially given this unknown?
Sure. I mean, I start by looking at their data. I look at their information. I ask for documents such as, let me see your high school transcript. And if you've taken any community college courses through dual credit, I want to see those as well. Official is great, but I know it's hard to get official at this point. Unofficial is fine. I'm trying to see, I'm looking for trends. You know, are there subjects that they tend to do better in? Are there areas that they're struggling? What is their overall GPA? Obviously, I really can't do much with this last semester. I mean, a lot of students are pass fail. And so how did they do between freshman year and first semester of the junior year? Just to get a sense of where they are, if there's a class rank available, you know, where are they falling in their class? What is their class rank? And so that gives me a sense of where they are in the context of their high school. If there is something called a school profile available, that will give me further insight because I know what kind of community that they're coming from. Maybe their high school, 99% of the students from their high school go on to college, or maybe only 60%, or maybe only 50%. That gives me additional information regarding academic rigor and how academically ready are they for college, and what kind of colleges might be a better fit for them based on what academic climate they're coming from. And so I look at their standardized test scores, if they have an SAT score or an ACT score. And I generally will look at the one that's higher. Sometimes certain populations might do better on the ACT than the SAT. And so, of course, I might advise that the student try taking one of each. Maybe they've only taken one. Back when I was in high school, I didn't even know about the ACT.
Yeah, I was going to say it was kind of popular, but not really. It was like if you were on the West Coast, you did the ACT, and the East Coast, you did the SATs.
So, I mean, so that's part of it, too, and looking at their standardized test scores, but then also looking at their resume to date. You know, what have you been involved in? You know, are you a leader in any of these organizations? Are you in varsity or JV? What are you passionate about? Are there any service organizations that you'd like to spend your time? That you spent your time with prior to COVID-19.
That you enjoy when you saw people.
Right, when we can see people. And so just getting a sense of a kind of a snapshot of them academically, and then also just clubs and activities and test score wise. And then also ask them about what's in there. What did they see? What did they imagine in their mind? And I have a series of questionnaires that I take a student through. And I talk to them about things ranging from what size school are you interested in? It's almost like a dating profile. With them. You know, are they tall, dark, and handsome? I mean, what are you looking for in college? And so what geographic location do you prefer? What kind of climate is important to you? You know, are sports important to you? Do you plan to get involved in Greek life or not? Or maybe that's not important. What major are you thinking about right now? Because we want to make sure that the schools that we're looking at, they offer a strong program in that area of study for them. And so just, you know, what kind of political climate, what kind of diversity are you interested in? Not just ethnic diversity, but other types of diversity. And so those kind of questions. And then, of course, this is the question that parents don't want to answer. How much are you prepared to spend for your child's education each year? They will do everything, say any and everything, but answer that question sometimes.
Yeah. And I feel like they want to be able to say, yes, I can afford Harvard if my kid got in, but realistically they may not be able to.
And I totally understand. You want to be able to say wherever you want to go, sweetheart. But that's not necessarily the reality. And I need the parents to step up and say, this is what we have. This is what we're working with. If they want to go somewhere more expensive, they're going to have to be creative. They're going to think outside the box. They're going to have to apply for scholarships. They may have to work if they want to make this happen, but to be honest with their son or daughter, and it's hard because you don't want to let them down, but the opposite of that would be to set them up. They're applying to a school that there's no way to pay for it. I mean, there are only a limit to how many loans you can take out. I mean, and the student is
how much debt you want your child to have coming out.
And it may not even make sense based on the major that they're considering. Maybe they're looking at a major in education. And do you really want to send them to a school that's $60,000 a year and they're going to be a teacher. Does that make financial sense? I mean,
it's a great question. Yeah. And then, so let's say they need scholarships. How do you then navigate into that realm?
Well, what I do is I look at what the student has to offer. And actually, one of my plans down the line is to create an app where a student can type in what their information is, what their background is, and it will basically generate for them these are the best strategies for your family. Because some people, they're coming from a military family. And they can, you know, tap into their parents' military benefits. Or maybe they might be open to the idea of ROTC and then use that as a way to pay for college. Yeah. So I've had some students choose to do that. And others that maybe focus more on, I work really hard in the classroom, I have a high GPA, I did well in my standardized test, I need some merit-based money. Others have done a lot of community service and they can get scholarships for their service. Or some are really good at writing and they can apply for some of those contests where you write an essay or you write a speech, you memorize it, you deliver it. That was one of the things that I did with like some of the civic organizations. I wrote a lot of speeches and memorized and delivered them and competed in that way because I was in speech and debate as well.
That was a thing you can get scholarship on. Wow.
And so you can also, you know, get a scholarship as a debater. So there's so many different ways. And so really looking at what the student is bringing to the table and say, oh, well, based on these things about you, you're likely to get money for these. And so let's focus your strategy on this. It may be like that your family is middle class. And actually, I find that middle class families probably have the most difficult time paying for college because they don't have the highest need. But then they don't have enough discretionary money either to send their child to college. So they're kind of like stuck in the middle. And so maybe it's a situation where the family, the student is coming from a family of maybe educators or people who work for the government, for the state or whatever. And so they make a respectable living, but they're not high wage income earners. But at the same time, they're not at the low end of the spectrum either. And so that affects the strategy too. Whether they can qualify for merit-based aid or not, or if they're even eligible for need-based aid. And so that the college list can change based on what the student's financial situation looks like.
What if a student doesn't have the best GPA? Are you still able to help them as well?
I say yes, but sometimes families may not want to hear what I have to say, but I will be honest. And so if they have a low GPA, let's do a reality check. Was it because of a situation that happened in the family or a health issue, or are they not motivated, or maybe school is not really what they're excited about right now? What is the reason behind that GPA? And if maybe it could be that college is not right for them, or maybe you might need to let that student prove themselves to you by letting them start off in community college before you just ship them off. Because I mean, some of the college experiences are like resorts. They have these wonderful dorms and facilities, and it's a big investment. And it's like, I think you need to prove yourself first before I send you off and make that investment. And so let the students show that they are serious about really giving their best effort and not just going off on vacation.
But I think that's a good point that there are so many options and everyone is different and that's okay. And so for someone who may not even a bad GPA, but just an average GPA and be, I guess, an average student, and they may not want to go to a community college, but they may not be able to get into the Ivies. You've been to so many schools. Is there still a good path for them too?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's a college for everyone. I mean, I've literally gone to schools where, I mean, one school, they were like, they're farming. that's what they do there. And so there's a school for everyone. And so personality, just different kinds of majors. I mean, there's another one, they teach you how to, you can get a degree and you can run a ski resort. I mean, there's everything imaginable out there. I mean, there are schools that cater to different kind of populations. Some will cater to the most elite academically. They want the best and the brightest. And even if you're the best and the brightest, you still may not get in. There's some who really want that middle 50%. And there are some that will admit you without a standardized test score because they are test optional. Or there are some that their mission is to help the student who maybe they were that solid B student. And that's pretty much the population that's their sweet spot. And so part of hiring a college counselor is the beauty of that is once they get to know your student and where they fall in the continuum and what their needs are and what they're looking for, you can make a match that's a suitable match for them. And so and that doesn't mean the school is not as good. It's just that it serves a different demographic, and it's about matching to the, you know, where the student will thrive. And so there's a school for everyone. And sometimes it may not be a 2-year program. It could be a 1-year program. It could be a license that they earn. It's not always, every kid does not fit into this box. And we have to stop trying to fit everyone into this box of, oh, you have to go get a 4-year degree. Certainly we want to level the playing field. And if anyone wants to go on to a 4-year degree, and that's in their heart, that's in their career path, by all means, we want to help students be able to do that. But they can still earn some really nice wages, not going necessarily the whole 4 years. In some cases, I went to one presentation at a trade school, and the person who spoke to me, he's like, yeah, I went to school and I became a band instructor. And I came back to this program to become an electrician, and I make more. I was an electrician, and I can take care of my family now, and I couldn't when I was a band instructor.
Yeah, no, yeah. I've heard a lot about the trade schools. You've been coming out with, not it's not as expensive to go, and you come out making a lot more money because it's high demand.
And we will still need someone working HVAC. I'm in Texas. I mean, if you're in Texas, as hot as it gets here, I mean, you are set.
No, that's so true. And I am very impressed with you that you've gone to over 200 schools. I think that alone says just so much about how dedicated you are to really helping students find that match. Because I know when my kids are a little bit older and that we're starting to think about this, I would never even thought about farming or like all these other things. But what if that's something that they're interested in? It'd be good to know that existed, or owning a ski resort, because having that business mindset, maybe not a ski resort, but any other type of business. And to know that there's colleges out there that cater to that, I think that's really great. Do you have any other like tips for moms or for parents that do have kids getting ready for college, of things that they can start to do?
Well, I actually put together, thank you for asking that question, Jen. I actually put together a report for parents. It's called 3 Ways to Recession-Proof College Costs. And I'm making that available just because I know what kind of times we're in right now. And it goes through some strategies that gives parents some things to think about in terms of how can I contain the college costs? How can I lessen the cost of my child's education following high school? And so they can access that through tinyurl.com/Dr. Jen Report. Again, that's tinyurl.com/Dr. Jen Report. And I'll say it one more time.
I'll put in the show notes as well, but please say it one more time.
Okay, tinyurl.com/Dr. Jen Report. And you get access that free report right away, and have some strategies to help you think about lowering the cost of your child's education. I mean, during these times, we need this kind of information, strategic information, more than ever.
No, that is spot on. Is there anything, any other tips that you can think of as well while we're talking about that?
Let me see. I will say that I have a book coming out.
Congratulations. Yep,
thank you so much. It will be available in August. I am pre-selling the book in about 2 weeks on Amazon. And the book is called Generation Edge, Your GPS to Career Success. It is targeting teenagers and young adults, kind of walking them through a little bit about my story and what I learned, and basically the process that's in my online course that I created. And it also gives them specific strategies to help them so that when they finish, when they head off to college and when they graduate from college, they actually have a plan. And they're I have this degree, what do I do with it? And so it's really about helping them to be successful in their career, be happy, be fulfilled, but to have a plan. And it gives them some very strategic information in that book. And so I would encourage families to be on the lookout for that in a couple of weeks on Amazon. It will be available for pre-sale.
And by the time this airs, it'll probably already be out. So I will also put a link to that in the show notes because I want to pick up a book on that. Mm-hmm. That's great. Well, thank you so much. At this point in the show, I'd like to transition into our lightning round. This is where I ask my guests the same four questions every week. Dr. Jen, are you ready?
Okay, I hope so.
they're not too bad. Don't worry. Okay. All right. So question number one is, what is one fun fact about you that not many people know?
Part of my scholarship strategy that I developed for myself was to compete in beauty pageants.
Awesome. Okay, that's cool.
And so I've competed in a couple of beauty pageants.
Yeah.
That was interesting.
Which ones did you do?
I did some of the local ones. There was a Miss Black Conroe in my hometown, and I was first runner up for that. And then there was a fraternity and when I was in college that also had one as well, Miss Black and Gold. And so I didn't place in that one, but I was thinking ahead about all the different ways to get money for college, and beauty pageants are a way to win money for college. And so that was something that I did.
Kudos to you. That's amazing. Did you get some money just for placing?
Yes. For first runner up. Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. Congrats. Mm-hmm. Are beauty pageants still a good way to get money if that's something of interest to people or not really?
Well, honestly, I think that, I mean, I was really just grasping for straws. I was just like, I need money for school. You
know, I'll do whatever.
I'll do whatever strategy, you know. And I think it's a lot of work. And I think some of the people start when they're much younger and just, I mean, we've seen stuff on TV, reality TV, and how involved parents get. I'm not sure that that's the best route to go. Yeah. I think there are other ways, you know, to get a better return on investment.
Yeah.
I was doing the best that I could. I was a first generation college student. I was just like, wherever there's money, let me consider.
Hey, man, your passion definitely shines through in everything that you do. So kudos to you for even putting yourself out there. All right. Well, number two is, who inspires you the most and why?
Wow. I find that there's inspiration. It's supposed to be lightning round. It's supposed to be quick. And I'm so not quick.
No, don't worry about it.
I feel like there's inspiration to be found everywhere. And I'll just keep it simple and say my son inspires me. I mean, his curiosity and his innocence and his joy. And his energy, it just really makes me want to be a better person. It just makes me want to be a better person.
One day I would love to meet your son because I feel like he is, from what you've described, he is amazing. And I think that is a testament to you too, for all the great work you've done by setting an example for him, by having your own journey laid out. And you seem like you've always been dedicated and devoted. I'm sure he'll just follow right in your footsteps. So.
We'll see. We'll see. I think he's going to be pretty awesome. I just don't really know exactly how that's going to all pan out, but his journey.
I know as a parent too, it's just fun to watch and see what happens.
Yes, it is. It's very exciting.
All right, well, question number three is, what books are you reading now or have read that you've loved and would recommend?
One of the books that I really have enjoyed is The Millionaire Messenger by Brendan Burchard.
Oh.
And I'm enjoying it because it basically talks about how everyone has a story and how everyone has a unique contribution. And it just walks you through identifying what that thing is or what those things are that you can offer others. And then a way to actually do it for a career. And I really appreciate that because I feel like there are a lot of adults who maybe they're good at something and that's how they landed in a career, but they're not really excited about getting up every day and doing their job. You know, they do it because you have a mortgage, car note, you have kids to feed, but they're not necessarily living a life they're passionate about. And I feel very blessed to do work that energizes me. And I want that for everyone. And sometimes it's hard to know where to even start. And so I found that The Millionaire Messenger was a very uplifting book for me, even though I have a lot of clarity regarding what I'm put on this planet to do. It was still very, very inspiring and also very practical.
I love that. I'm definitely going to check that out too. I have to add that to my list. I think that's very, because I feel like many people these days do have no idea and they're just in the 9-to-5 grind circling just to make ends meet for their families and hard to get out of the rat race and even take a moment to think about what could I do? That's what I love so much about the work you're doing is because you're trying to help them before they get into the rat race so they don't get in.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. How many recommendations did you want?
If you got another really good one, go for it.
Okay. I think that's the one I really want to, because I keep going back to that. So definitely check that one out. Please check
it out. I will put a link to that in the show notes as well. All right. The last question is, what is one actionable tip or piece of advice you can tell our moms out there to help them on their own financial independence journey?
That's a wonderful question. Invest in yourself and do it on a regular basis. And you can use that word invest in a number of different ways. I mean, certainly you want to be responsible and invest for your retirement, but also, I mean, investing in yourself in a self-care way as well. I mean, when you're a mom, everyone comes first, and it's a challenge. It's difficult to put yourself first ever. I mean, even if you're trying to enjoy your favorite yogurt and your child asks you for your, like today I told my son, no, he could not have my favorite yogurt. That's mama's yogurt. But there's some boundaries, you know, this is my yogurt. But invest in yourself in terms of self-care, in terms of doing things that make you smile, that make you happy, that feed your soul, that help with your well-being and help with your physical well-being as well. I mean, and it's tough to work out. I mean, there have been nights at 11 o'clock where I'm on my treadmill that I found on Craigslist because it was very cheap. But it's like, I have to work out, you know? I mean, I have to take care of myself. I can't help anyone if I'm not able, if I'm not healthy. And so, you know, carving out that time to exercise or to really work really hard to schedule a pedicure. I mean, that's like, it seems like, you know, I mean, I know we're in a COVID times right now. And so I've like bought my little toe pillows and tried to figure out how to like paint my own toenails. And it doesn't look as great as it does in the salon, but
hey, it's something though. Self-care. Do what you gotta do.
That's to be yourself. Because it just is so important and it gets lost. You lose it when you're a mom and you're a wife, or, you know, as women, we do so much for so many people. So just, and even in like intellectually, you know, continuing to listen to audiobooks or you know, or reading books, things that you're excited about. I mean, you know, I really like to read like Clean Eating magazine. And so just taking the time to, you know, maybe just get my favorite magazine.
Yeah.
You know, and get inspired with some really healthy recipes. And so invest in yourself. Don't forget to invest in yourself.
No, it's very true. And I think it's so salient, especially now in these COVID times when we can't even barely think of other people. And now it's like, oh, wait, but you really do, for your mental health, need to take care of yourself.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for coming on. It's been a true pleasure and honor. How can my listeners connect with you further?
Oh, I would love to stay in touch by, maybe we can start off by taking a look at the report, tinyurl.com/Dr. Jen Report. That's a great way to get in touch with me. Also, follow me on social media at Dr. Jen Price. I'm on Instagram and Twitter, and I also have a Facebook group that I share great resources with families. So find me on social media. I want to stay connected with you.
Great. Thank you so much. And I'll put all those links in the show notes as well. Dr. Jen, thank you.
Thank you.
All righty. That wraps up another amazing episode of the Investor Mama podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. Dr. Jennifer Price was awesome. And I hope you walked away with a new or an enhanced perspective on the college admissions process and how you can really help your kids or another kid you know who's looking to pick the right fit, but also knows that college is a huge expense and there are ways that you don't have to go into debt. So I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you enjoyed my other content as well. If you did, please subscribe on the platform that you're listening to so you can get updated on new episodes released every Thursday. And also, please leave a rating or review. It really helps let the providers know that you are finding value with my content. And so if you do that, just shoot me a screenshot with a picture of it, and I will send you a free calculator. And you can email me at Jen, J-E-N, at investormama.com. This week, I got an awesome review from F.H. Wasson. Thank you so much. They wrote, "I just recently found out about this podcast and can't get enough. I've now listened to several episodes and have found each one of them full of valuable information that I've been able to put to work right away. This podcast is a must listen for any mama who's ready to make her money work for her." Bravo, Jen. Thank you so much for leaving me this review. And if again, if you too would like to leave me a review, just send me a screenshot and you can email me at jen@investormama.com. Well, this is Investor Mama. I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Investor Mama podcast. If you like today's episode, please support us by clicking subscribe on the platform you are currently listening to, leaving a comment or awesome review, and spreading the wealth and sharing this podcast with friends and family or on social media. Don't forget to check out investormama.com to connect with our community and sign up for our email. Stay tuned for next week's episode.